Eye on Careers.
In association with Laymoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
This is Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. This episode is dedicated to everybody out there who's been told they can't do it. If you've ever been told you're not going to make it. If you ever had a manager who didn't believe in you, or tried to kneecap you. A boss who tried to destroy you. Someone who tried to crush your dreams. For everyone out there who's been knocked down, because life is tough and life will knock you down. No matter how tough you are, life is tougher. And you have to get up. Last night I was with Yogesh Mehta. He's the founder of Petrochem. Life knocked him down. Life knocked him down real hard, left him bankrupt and homeless, armed with nothing. But a dream. He built a billion-dollar business from scratch. He made it. And so can you. A lot of people tell me, you need to be passionate about what you're doing. You need to find something you're passionate about. Well, I don't believe that for a second, because I can tell you, I will choose tenacity and determination over passion and being excited about my job every time. Because anybody can be good on a good day. Anybody can carry on when things are going well and they're enjoying their work. But the difference between the average and the champion is the champion carries on when times are tough. They keep working it when the job sucks. And everybody else quits. They give up. The number one thing you need to do, never quit. Never give up. What it takes to be a success, what it takes to get to the top of your profession. Our first guest is a man who has studied he has studied business, economics, the secrets to success. He has risen to the top of his profession as well. So he hasn't just talked the talk, he walks the walk. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute of Management and Technology of Dubai. It's Professor Sedwin Fernandez. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
This is Eye on Careers, Executive CV. Professor Sedwin Fernandez is the CEO of Institute of Management Technology in Dubai. IMT Dubai is an international business school and its MBA program was amongst the top ranked by Forbes Middle East magazine in 2012. Sedwin's earlier academic positions have been as the Dean of Academic Affairs at Emirates College of Technology, MBA program leader at Middlesex University, Dubai, and Chair of the Graduate Studies at University of Wollongong in Dubai. His experience in the academic and corporate sector have enabled him to design and manage innovative MBA and management programs. Sedwin is a prominent lecturer and researcher in economics, management and supply chain, and has over 15 publications in prominent journals on research conducted in the UAE. He follows cricket with a passion, and the performance of the Indian cricket team determines how his day will go. He believes that every student must play some sport, as it teaches you that results come from hard work, teamwork, and how to handle success and failure early in life.
Professor Sedwin, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Good evening, Shane.
This is this song was dedicated to you to capture the spirit and ethos of higher education and the achievements of the human intellect.
Thank you very much.
And how many books do you actually have to read before you become a professor?
I have lost count, but one never gets tired of reading books, and it's quite an enjoyable thing. So, you know, it's something which is a pleasurable activity, and you know, therefore, one does not really count on these things.
I find, though, you know, when I was in university, you know, I had a tough course, and I said to the professor, I said, you know, I think I really need to drop your course, because the more I read, the more confused I become. And I don't know if this is true. This is just my own theory, is that, like, if you really are, you know, when you really become an expert on something, then you really will be lost in the subject matter. Like, does it actually become clear? Because, you know, there's so much information out there. There's so many different perspectives, and you can't really find that absolute truth, can you?
I agree in a way, in the sense that the more you learn, the more you know how much you don't know. So in a way, yes. I remember once I, you know, finished my PhD and submitted my dissertation, I thought I knew everything, and then I realized that, you know, I really don't know anything. And I think that's what learning is all about. You know, it's a continuous process, and you go, you know, to the areas which are unexplored.
Yeah, and you know, tonight, and what we look at on this show exists in so many vicissitudes. It's impossible, really, to say, you know, can you really say what is leadership? Can you really say what is success? These intangible subjectives, which nonetheless are goals on the horizon for anyone who wants to rise to the top 5%, but you're almost chasing an elusive goal because you can't quite touch it, you can't quite taste it, but you know that it's out there.
Yeah, in a way, I think for somebody starting off in their careers, just to do best on what they have been assigned to do, and you know, take it from there. I think the leadership, the success, all will just follow through from hard work and tenacity, as you said in your opening.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think. But, you know, on the flip side, as we were just talking before we went on air, my good friend Sohad Akuri, who's one of the great designers here in Dubai, his wedding dresses are world renowned, is just completely amazing. He would totally vehemently, I'm sure, oppose me, saying, you know, passion has really been the crux of his success, of course, but we cannot deny, you know, what you said also is true, because Sohad works insanely hard. He's a very tough worker. But how did it all start for you? I mean, did you always know you wanted to be leading an educational institution, or what were the early days like? You know, were you a natural brain child? Were you a bookworm back in grade school?
No, not at all. In fact, with my schoolmates, who I lost touch with, I mean, they were a bit shocked that I had completed my doctorate and was in the education field.
They were surprised.
They were shocked, I think.
That's not... I think you got to get rid of these friends.
Yeah, so, you know, in the earlier years, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had an idea of what I did not want to do, and that was to become a salesperson. No disrespect to the profession, but I think I just didn't have the personality and the talent to become one. And one thing led to another, and I got into the educational field by accident at the night school where adults were being taught. When I was in the undergraduate, a teacher had not appeared, and, you know, I was just asked to fill in, and I enjoyed the experience.
Serendipity, and sometimes, yeah, to know what you are, you have to know what you're not. This is the story of Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the Chief Executive Officer for the Institute of Management and Technology. He will be sharing his insights into the economy, into which management approaches really work in the Gulf and Middle Eastern context, and as well his secrets to success, some groundbreaking research coming up. So this is one interview you don't want to miss. Hello, welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And this is a show where we look at what does it take to be successful. We look at some of the region's biggest success stories. You know, earlier today, someone was calling me about how to negotiate their salary. Other people may call in. They may have a question about unethical practices by their boss. Whatever it is, we are here. And we also have a professor. In fact, one of the top professors, in fact, the CEO of a university University here with us as well, Mr. Professor Sedwin Fernandez, who will be on in just a second. So it's a great opportunity for you. Coming up, coming up, we have the recruiter of the year, Toby Simpson from Gulf Recruitment, and he will be giving some tips on how to manage your job search. That will be totally amazing. And of course, then we will be closing the show with Laurent Rovenel. He's the CEO of HMH and a hotelier with global experience, and I'm sure he'll have some insights. And of course, the hospitality segment is actually, I think, one of the largest employers, or in fact, when you look at jobs posted in Dubai or available jobs, they represent a big part, if not the lion's share, of the jobs that are on the market. But enough of that. Let's hear visit our guest here. We have Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute of Management Technology, Dubai. Professor, welcome to Welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thanks, Shane.
So you were saying that, it was by default you were in night class and the teacher didn't show up and you snagged his job.
Yeah. always show up for work. That's the lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Rajaram, the CEO of Alnabuddha, Buddha, says, I think he says like 90% of it is just showing up, yeah. Getting that press on. So what was it? It was love at first try there. So as soon as you got up there, did you feel like this was it? This was what you're going to do?
I felt very comfortable doing that. So it was something which was when I graduated and did my master's, it was something which I naturally went into.
So then what were you doing? You were just following the academic path that said, I did my master's, let's do my PhD, or were you like,
no,
I'm going to be a professor, I need a PhD?
No, I didn't even do that. I was not even planning to do my master's. I used to play sport when I was an undergraduate. And
cricket, was it?
Unfortunately not, it was basketball.
Basketball?
Yeah. And I did not get into the team. And so that's one of my failures, because it meant everything to me at that particular time. My entire life revolved around getting into the national team.
Were you practicing?
Oh, yeah. I did a lot of stuff, and I was in the team the previous year and didn't make it into the team. And I said, okay, now what? I mean, so this career is over. What do I do next? So I just said, okay, let me complete my master's. And when I got into the master's, it was, I loved economics, and I met my mentor there, who was my PhD supervisor, and the late Dr. Manohar Rao. And after that, it was just one thing led to another. And before I knew it, I had completed my doctorate and was teaching.
And you were teaching. How important is a mentor, do you think? Do you think people should go out and seek a mentor? Because I think that's one thing that's missing in the Middle Eastern context. It's not very common for people to have mentors here.
I think it is the most important thing, especially when you're young and especially young into a profession. And your mentor actually gives you more confidence, because they have more confidence in you than in that you have in yourself. And they always give the guide and give the path as to, how to go ahead. So I think a mentor is most important. And as you rightly said, I think it's the onus of managers and top management in the region to manage and mentor, their colleagues to help them become successful.
And, at a certain point, did you say, okay, I'm going to lead one of these financial institutions? Or what was the progression, and what was really the milestones that led to you getting to the top echelons of the education industry?
I don't think it was any a determined path or something which was planned. I just answered an advertisement for an economist, which turned out to be that of Saudi Arabian Airlines in Jeddah. And within 3 weeks, I was in Jeddah, in a completely new country, completely new culture. And I stayed there for 10 years and then got back to teaching.
Okay, so you had a detour,
yes,
as an economist. So what was that, predicting the oil futures or the oil and gas futures? I guess that's what they would be most interested in.
No, the airline was, I was in charge of international projects. So wherever they invested internationally, I would sort of do the study, negotiate with different partners, monitor the projects. It gave me a fantastic grounding in the way the corporate world operates, and would help me to bring that experience back into teaching when I got back after a few years.
So having an economist background, what's your take on the market? It feels like, just from an executive search perspective, and Toby Simpson, the recruiter of the year, is coming on later. I get his feed on that. But it really feels this is a boom market. I mean, I think all of my clients, everybody I talk to, the hiring is going, growth is happening. Sheikh Zayed Road is jam-packed. What's your take? The property prices are soaring. Commodity prices have just shot through the roof in the last 30 days. What is happening?
Oh, yeah. I think even without the recruitment surge, try getting an apartment in Dubai. For love of money, all the apartments are full. And so it really shows that, people are coming in, and that's one of the leading indicators that the business is booming. And I think the business is booming because of some really great policies which the UAE and Dubai in particular put in place. You have the Dubai World Central, the Logistic City, the DMCC.
They killed it. They killed it. They weren't even anywhere in tea. Now they have 60% of the global export market of tea goes through Dubai because of DMCC. These guys are, and that's just gold. They've started at 6 billion. Now they are trading 70 billion. They had the diamond trade was just $5 million in 2002, 2003. Now they have over 40 billion in diamond trade. It's unbelievable. Ahmed bin Sulaym's knocking it out of the park. His team there is first rate as well. And that's just one little piece of the puzzle that's happening.
Dubai is amazing. I mean, I can talk for my industry, education. I mean, 2002, 2003, there was, one small private university. And in 10 years later, there are 48,000 students and 58 universities. I mean, that is really amazing.
Amazing. I say, don't bet against Dubai, because if you do, you will lose. Go ahead.
And the good part is that Dubai has learned its lessons from the last downturn. And, growth is, precautions are being taken to make it more sustainable. Because as in any economy, we always overshoot. When the going is good, we think it's really superb. And when it's bad, it's really, really bad. So this time, I think Dubai has learned its lessons, and I think the growth is going to be sustainable.
But the bottom line is, if you're out there looking for a job, stop whining, because this is a great market. This is a great job market. It's your process. It's your approach. You need to fix it. This is the story of Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute of Management Technology of Dubai, who's going to be sharing his secrets to success and some more insights into how to run your business, how to run your career in the Middle East. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to be successful in the Middle East. Coming up on the show, we have the Recruiter of the Year, Toby Simpson from Gulf Recruitment, to be sharing his insights into how to find a job in this market. We're going to be closing the show with Laurent Wauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of HMH. He's a hotelier. He'll be giving us some insight into that. Now, I would like to invite back Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute of Management of Technology of Dubai.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
I almost feel like you could have been a boxer, like Sedwin Fernandez. It sounds like you could have.
I'm lucky I'm on radio and not on television.
But, it has that, you have like that professional sports name, so maybe, it's still to come. Because, you could be Olympic, you could still do curling and be an Olympian.
Oh, great.
Yeah. If you start, curling's your last stop, if you still have Olympic ambitions.
Always.
So, you know, but you've been studying, you know, most of your life. So you have a lot of insight. Of course, you had a 10-year run in industry as well. So an interesting mix of academics and practice, and a very good flavor for the Middle Eastern market. And a lot of the theory that's created is. You know, from the West, right? And does that actually translate? You know, who's really driving the paradigm of business thought? And, you know, these are coming from the business centers, New York, London, Hong Kong, Singapore. You know, we're getting there. We're not there yet. Right. We're an emerging economy. Do these theories actually translate into the Middle East, into the GCC?
Yeah, they don't translate really very well, yeah, because the sort of business environment is different, especially in the Gulf states. When I say the business environment is different, I mean a lot of the employees are expats who are on work visas, and if you lose your job, you know, for whatever reason, you know, you have to uproot your family and go back home, unlike if you lose your job in New York or Mumbai or in Perth. So workers are a bit reluctant to show any sort of that they are not happy with the organization till they have another job in hand. So what happens is that, as you know, that managing talent is the number one problem of a CEO. Yeah, retaining talent, making sure that the good people stay with you, and many a times you're not sure, or you know, the employee does not give you any sign by dropping his performance that they are not happy with something or the other, and suddenly one day there's a resignation, and it, you know, it shocks you as to, okay, what's wrong? Why didn't you sort of bring this up before? So I think what happens here is that CEOs and HR managers should always make sure that they have got other methods of evaluating whether their key performance are happy with the organizations and have got long-term plans with the organization.
We just got an SMS in from Ahmed, who says he can't wait for Sunday. And back home, you know, North America, Sunday's game day for the NFL, Super Bowl just passed, but I don't think that's what he means, because he is waiting to get back to work. He loves being a financial controller. Ahmed, all the best to you. And, you know, the one thing that we know about Ahmed is he's great with figures. But listen, when you look at all these big fancy performance management, and they say, oh, we have to find out how our people are doing, and we need to do an engagement survey, and we need to do this, and we need to do that, and we have to get, you know, why don't you just ask the people, you know, how many times have you been working in an organization and the boss sits down with you and says, how are we doing? Are you happy? Do you think we're doing a good job as an employer? And every review you go into, they're reviewing your performance. And I'm like, listen, why? You know, I think you're the one who needs to be reviewed, because I'm walking out the door. I don't have equity in the business.
Right.
You're the one with equity in the business.
Right.
You should be the one who's concerned, because you're the one who has the most to lose. And it's just a simple question. It's just a question. You don't need all this big hoopla, blah, 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 you know,
right,
stuff. Why don't you just ask them, how are you doing?
But many a times, the people will be reluctant to give you what they really think. They will let you know, you know, what they think you want them to know. So that's where the challenge is, because I always say, when people ask you for, say, give me feedback, they only want positive feedback. And they react quite negatively when you point out, you know, some things that could be improved. So people would be reluctant to give you what they really think about what needs to be done. And so that's where the challenge comes in, and in really being on top of managers being on top of their game to making sure that they retain the talents. Who are the critical people in the organization, and what needs to be done to keep them there?
But sometimes you can just ask a leading question by, you know, you can just say, I know you're not happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and then it's very tough, yeah, if the person's not happy to, yeah, like, weasel out of that one, right?
Right.
But I just think they don't care. I mean, there's no process. Like, how come in the performance review, there isn't a review for the company. How are we doing? And I think they're starting to do that, but maybe not much. So what you're saying is performance is not an indication
right.
that your people are happy. In yeah. fact, your top performers could be very unhappy.
Yes, and in fact, top performers leave because they always get jobs somewhere else. It is important that we know as a company what needs to be done to retain them, because performance is can be seen, whereas satisfaction is intrinsic. So I can be dissatisfied and still be a performer, and just wait for the right time.
But isn't it though? I read one study where people because the psychology of happiness is taking foot now, and there was one study one of the schools had done, and they looked at people in the top 2% of the salary bracket and said, these people must love their job. They must be so happy. They're performing so well. And they actually found an asymmetrical relationship. And in fact, the top performers, a lot of them were miserable. In fact, you may even have higher incidence of suicide. They may have a higher incidence of substance abuse. They may be really tortured souls, but they're performing extremely, extremely well. So, is it really that, does happiness really have a role in this?
I'm not an expert in this field, but I think happiness is a combination of a lot of things. Amit, for example, should enjoy himself on the weekend to get, the balance going and recharge his batteries. But so it just cannot be about work. And what happens with high performers, and I think I'm going out on a limb here, but even suicide rates in Japan are quite high. And one of the reasons is that
Tokyo is the highest economic output city in the world.
And yes, and because everybody is measured by a certain standard of performance, so that could be one of the reasons.
So we should be miserable if you want to be a top performer, because that, if Tokyo has the highest economic output of any city in the world and they have the highest suicide rate, if you want to be successful, you need to be miserable.
No, not necessarily. I think it just depends on the individual and, what's the balance you draw for yourself.
This is Professor Sedwin Fernandez drawing a line between success and happiness. Which side of that line will you be standing on? He'll be coming back with what it takes to be successful. What are the traits of a successful executive? Stay with us.
Who said money can't buy love?
Welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we're looking at what it takes to be successful. For those of you who really want to find out, we have one of the top professors who's about to share that and some groundbreaking research for you. But right now, we have one of the top professors here with us, Professor Sedwin Fernandez, Chief Executive Officer of the Institute of Management Technology, Dubai. Professor, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks, Shane.
And so, Professor, these traits, if we have these traits, the statistical probability of us making millions increases?
Yes.
Excellent. And if we don't have these traits, we are just finished. Just don't get out of bed on Sunday morning like Ahmed is. Ahmed's going to be running into work.
Yes.
The financial controller. He possibly will become financial controller of the year, 2014. But what are these? So these traits, if you don't have them, it's an end game. It's the end of this line for you.
Yes, I think
yes.
as a CEO, there's just one trait which I put really at the top.
One trait.
There.
Oh, you got it down to one trait.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we don't have this, we're hooped.
Yep.
Okay. So should I give you the trumpet again? So
yes, please.
Okay. Here we go, as we go deep into the intellect of Professor Sedwin Fernandez, the secrets to success, the number one trait. Please, Professor.
Yeah, the number one trait for success is execution, execution, execution.
I love that. I love that. So, actually, let's we We have one thing on the show where we actually ask everybody the secrets to success. So maybe we should do that before we go through the traits of success. So let's do that.
ION Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So, Professor, what's your secret to success?
I think the most important thing is execution.
ION Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
I love that execution, because I always feel, not to say anything bad about the academics and stuff, but I feel that, and obviously you wouldn't be in this group, but they put too much emphasis on strategy. And what you're saying, execution, is really down to, you know, good tactics over good strategy.
Yes, the strategy versus tactic debate of, you know, Michael Porter and Henry Mintzberg is well known. But I think even if you have a well thought out strategy, somebody needs to really get down and, execute it. A lot of the mission statements, the vision statements just remain hanging there on the wall. Strategies are something which are dreams in the air. And who's going to do it? You just pass it down the line. Somewhere the buck stops and the company stops.
Yeah. Yes, you need ownership of the strategy. But so number one is execution.
Right.
What's number two?
I think the leader must really carry forward the organization. I strongly believe that the organization looks to the leader for taking it forward. So the person has to be honest and authentic. He cannot be, or she cannot be, saying one thing and doing another thing. And you need to walk the talk. And reward and recognize others, hire the best talent to support you in making your strategy successful.
So based on this, then you would predict that Apple stock is going to nosedive because, you know, they had the leader that was carrying the organization forward. He's gone now. They have a new CEO. Will Apple fall flat?
No, I don't think. I think they just changed their leadership style. Steve Jobs was obviously not a leader in the traditional sense and had his own unique style, which worked for Apple. But Apple is big enough to have structures in place which enable them to carry on even after Steve Jobs.
So I think the Apple stock is going to fall. I don't think that they're going to make, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
But that's with any technology company. Once they hit a peak, any stock could fall, whatever the leader. So it's, I think it's the creative destruction of technology industries.
So number one is execution. Number two is having that leader with the integrity, with the values and the character that inspires and drives people forward. What was number three again?
Hire the best talent.
The best people.
Yeah. And because they are going to make you and the corporation really look good.
And number four?
Number four is for individuals or anybody besides the leader also, is to, you know, just be fully committed to what you do. Okay? So many times, as you may have seen in your career also, people walk into the room and they're looking for a job and they're telling you what they want, without even ever getting into what they are going to offer to the organization. So first see what you are giving to the organization and work with complete dedication to your job. If you do not enjoy your job, then you should leave. And so, you know, every person, as long as they are happy with what they do, should continue in the job. Otherwise, you know, they should look elsewhere.
A few people you're SMSing in. What about procrastination? What if you're a procrastinator? How do you combat that? You know, if we want to get, you know, number one, we need to execute, have the capability to execute, but we're just missing that last factor. I guess what you're saying is the commitment, the procrastination. How do you overcome that?
I think the market overcomes that for you, because if you're not on the ball, you're out. And so, you know, you one has, so that's why the Mintzberg theory of strategy is just, you know, transient, and, you know, things move along very, very quickly because things are changing very fast, and you have to make strategy, you know, on your feet on a daily basis and not in some five-star hotel somewhere. And so the issue is you have to execute if you want to succeed in this market.
And so if I have the subtext of what you said, is that fear is the antidote to procrastination. And if you're procrastinating, you're not scared enough. And I think maybe that's also the problem in the Middle East, is we don't fire people fast enough. We need to let the hatchet man loose. And, you know, people stop procrastinating as much.
I don't know about we don't fire. A lot of people get fired quick enough in the Middle East, many a times, you know, for the wrong reasons. But I think, yes, as a leader, one has to get rid of people who are not performing.
To make a high-performance environment, you need to be cutting people loose. You believe that?
Yes, I strongly believe that, and I strongly believe that not every person should be treated the same. High performers should be rewarded.
And on the other side, you know, if we go back to your other, you know, point you were making about management in the Middle East, is that if you don't have that candor in the boardroom, you can't actually run the organization properly. So at the on the other flip side, you can't have someone being afraid to challenge the CEO or to bring information forward that may be contrary to, you know, what the zeitgeist within the organization actually is. So it's a balancing act.
Yeah, I think, I think it's the top organization or the top management which should create this organizational learning environment where people can challenge the traditional practices and say, okay, what about this? I don't think you're doing right. And it's nothing personal. It's all good for the business.
Well, I think this really hits the CFO role very heavily, because often the CFO needs to challenge the CEO, needs sometimes to even supersede the CEO to the board. Now, in the Middle Eastern context, especially where they can actually cancel your visa or whatever it is, this becomes difficult, you know. And I wonder if in one hand this is an Achilles heel of the Middle Eastern organization.
No, I don't think. I think the CFOs are CFOs all over the world. And if they get the big picture, there are some costs that need to be undertaken to get revenues. And those revenues don't come from, just by not doing anything. Because the challenge in most boardrooms is, why are your marketing costs this high? Your marketing costs are this high because your revenues are this high, you know. So,
yeah.
But okay, it depends on case to case basis on each company.
Well, to your point, I mean, we saw what happened with Enron, and, you know, the CFO there obviously didn't stand up to the CEO quite as much as we would have liked. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, Professor. We haven't even had a chance to scrape the surface of, you know, that huge intellect and intellectual horsepower there. We haven't been able to let loose. So, I think we definitely need to have you come back on the show and next time jump into some of these more exciting management philosophies and strategies.
Yeah, that'll be great. And it was great talking to you and to all the listeners of 103.8.
Thank you so much. Coming up, we have Toby Simpson, Recruiter of the Year from Gulf Recruitment. He'll be sharing his insights to how to work the Middle Eastern job market. And then coming up after that, we have Laurent Wovena, the Chief Executive Officer of HMH Hospitality Management Holdings, a hotelier for a few generations and just a guy who has lived all over the world. It'd be very interesting to hear his take on what's happening in the market and his approach to leadership. So we have an action-packed hour coming up. You really don't want to miss this, so stay with us.